Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. And an ad break might fire while I'm speaking. It's just one of the slight hangovers we've had of the technical issues. My apologies in relation to that. Okay, we've had lots of communications in this morning. Here's one, I believe, as it relates to the state of the roads from a listener.
Craig, the back roads around Balbafence and Order on Tudor Road are treacherous. Just ask people to be very, very careful.
Okay, indeed we will. And if it suits you to send in voice messages, just like our listener there, please feel free to do so. When it's safe to do so, of course, 086 60 25,000. So be really careful off the main roads. It is going to be a very cold couple of days, folks. So we can carry on with our lives, but just have to be a little bit more careful. Why does the council not grid housing estates, as we pay car tax and we have to drive on them roads just like the main roads? What are we paying car tax for? For one road is the same as the next, they say. Hi Greg, who was the two men on your show on Friday that said Van Gerwen was going to win the final? That was me and that was Mark from the newsroom. How they thought Luke was going to lose, I'll never know. So I was one of them and Mark was the other. I'll tell you why. It seemed so improbable. And that's great sport. That's what great sports people do, or very talented people do. They confound their critics, and that's exactly what it did. Now, I'm not a critic of Luke Littler's. He's fantastic. I just thought the way Van Gerwen was playing throughout the tournament, and Luke Littler wobbled a little bit here and there. I just thought that his experience would win out on the biggest stage of them all. And what happened was Luke Littler proved that he is phenomenal. He's absolutely phenomenal. And even Van Gerwen playing really well couldn't touch him. So more than happy to be wrong. It's sport, isn't it? You have to pick a side, and that's the mistake I made. I thought Van Gerwen would come through with his experience, but no. I heard that the council informed a local shop that they would be liable if they salted the front of their premises on the public footpath. If somebody tripped legally, what's the stance? If you salt somewhere, will you be liable? I don't know. It's an interesting one. I've never heard of that. But anyway, if someone out there knows the answer to that, please let us know. Road bad between the Cross and Bala Buffet. It seems to be the Finn Valley area, which is low-lying and often can be hit by black ice. Seems to be not doing very well. I'm heading to Galway at 9:30. Can you tell us where the ice is, please? I mean, you could come across the worst of the weather and it could be like a wonderful spring day. It's impossible to be able to accurately predict what your driving would be like from here to Galway. My apologies, and we're a little late with that anyway. Motorists, beware, the back roads are dangerous and slippy. The back road from Drumkeen to Letterkenny and Drumkeen to Convoy, very dangerous. There is black ice. I've had to go on the main road. Please tell cars to use their lights as well, as it's quite hard to see. Hi, Greg. I can't understand why the road going out of Carrigan's going to Newton is never salted and the school is on this busy road. Thank you. That is one that seems to come up from time to time, all right. Okay, the roads in Killigordon are passable with care. Motorists are skipping the traffic lights, which is causing problems. Everyone just needs to slow down. Good advice any time of the year, I think. The back roads of Bala Buffet are really bad with black ice. Please drive with care. So we've had a number of along those lines, particularly in that area, but not exclusively that area. But just be careful if you're out and about there. Right, it is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. Our phone lines and everything's back up and running now, thankfully. So if you want to give us a ring, 07491 25,000. If you want to text or WhatsApp the show, it's 086 60 25,000. Feel free to send in your voice messages as well to WhatsApp if that suits you a little bit better. And it can suit people for a myriad of reasons. Thanks so much for all of you texting in. I'll catch up on all the texts as this morning wears on, but we're going to cross over to our next guest now, who is Dr. Dara McCashin. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Dr. Dara, for those who aren't aware, is Assistant Professor at Dublin City University School of Psychology and creator of a new resource to help teachers and parents address online masculinity influencers. And I suppose it depends on which area of online we're talking about, but it is potentially, and the word's thrown out a lot, it certainly, I think X particularly, but not exclusively, is a place where we see an awful lot of toxic masculinity. Would you agree, Dara?
So thank you so much for introducing the resource produced alongside my colleagues, Dr. Fiona O'Rourke and Dr. Catherine Baker here at the Anti-Bullying Centre in DCU. We're actually quite cautious about the language that we use, and the term toxic masculinity is itself quite problematic. It tends to elicit quite defensive reactions and sometimes skews the conversation towards something other than that which was intended, which is to actually have an open and safe conversation about what masculinity is and isn't, and how the likes of influencers have really abused certain vulnerabilities, particularly in teens and preteen.
What are the problems then that we're seeing?
So I suppose more broadly in society, and perhaps you're aware of a recent Women's Aid report that looked at kind of really regressive and traditional ideas of masculinity. In society, we are seeing an uptick in misogyny, and this has been reflected in the classroom as well, where ever younger boys in particular are displaying particularly harmful attitudes, which then lead into behaviours as well. So there's a natural concern there about the trajectory of that.
It's very hard to counteract it, though, because it's often associated with success, with confidence, with wealth, with fast cars. The obvious example would be Andrew Tate, who's very loose with his language in relation to, you know, women's rights, women's roles in society, where they stand in relation to men. But it's not just that message. It's everything that around it, I think, that can reinforce it and make it seem really quite attractive.
Absolutely. And it's a lifting of red pill ideology going all the way back to the Matrix of all things. But the likes of Tate are quite specific and deliberate in their language, I would argue, in terms of how they're targeting the particular the vulnerabilities of boys, but also the kind of, as you say, the things that would potentially appeal. When in actual fact, if you do a deep dive of what Tate is and what he says and the structure behind it, it is nothing more than a glorified pyramid scheme wrapped
up
in
a business person. He's a business person,
imagery of wealth and so-called success.
Yeah, he's a business person, and his speciality is young men or older men and getting money off them. I mean, that's it. It's a business. It's the same as if someone is constantly talking about mop buckets on TikTok. You know, they're in the business of mop buckets. I would love if we could create a situation because we seem to be moving. Everyone sort of claims to be free thinking and thinking for themselves, and seem to be drawn to these echo chambers, which I find really quite ironic. And it's not just in this area; it's in many different areas. Before we talk about the tools that are available, if we could just get people to genuinely think for themselves and analyse what's being said to them and look at other sources of information and make decisions. But unfortunately, we aren't like that. And it's hard to resist. I find myself too sometimes having to check myself and say, hold on, you Greg, you know what you need to do here. You need to check an alternative source. You need to think a little bit more for yourself. It's very hard, especially if you're born into this. You know what I mean? If this is your lived experience in the online space.
100%. And look, as humans, we're particularly vulnerable to the likes of confirmation bias and echo chambers and things like that. Particularly as they play out online, really are problematic as we try and actually enact some basic critical thinking. As you say, check an alternative source, or simply even question the very thing that's been presented to us. And it is quite ironic yet that the likes of so-called free become synonymous with certain communities as well. And when you take an issue as sensitive as what it means to be a boy, a man, what is masculinity in a changing society, that becomes all the more sensitive. Mm. And teachers and parents are particularly concerned about how should they try and facilitate conversations around that too.
Yeah, so how do you do that? Because there is a guide, and that's what we're talking about, and that's why we invited you on. It's a new resource. So it's for teachers and parents, because we need help as well. You know, we don't have all the answers. This is new to an awful lot as well. So it's a three-part guide, And the first part looks at overall context. So talk to me. We're not going to be able to go through the whole guide here. We're giving people the headlines so that they can get an interest in it. But go on. What's the overall context?
Well, I mean, I suppose the overall context was everything we just discussed there about how this kind of online ecosystem of particular influencers is having such appeal. And it was a direct reaction to the explosion of TAFE 2021-22, and parents and teachers crying out for a particular resource to try and address the specifics of that. So part one of the resource talks about there's actually nothing particularly new about TAFE and some of those old school messages and the harms there and the pyramid scheme structure. That's all quite familiar. What is new is how it's reached younger audiences through social media. So we talk a bit about, for people that might not be aware, what are the messages and what is the ecosystem in which this is occurring?
Yeah, and I'm not trying to... So that's the what Tate does is it's in your face, right? He's not hiding behind it. He says what he does. But what about passive influence as well? And I'm not grouping these individuals together, but let's just say for an example. We've all heard the tape. It's not... left or right wing or whatever. We've all heard the tape of Donald Trump referring to grabbing women wherever he sees fit. We know that he's had liaisons with adult film stars. That stuff is all a fact. Elon Musk's his best mate. He owns one of the most influential platforms, multiple partners, multiple children, infidelity. All of that stuff's in there, right? They're not necessarily pushing a message the same as Andrew Tate, but they're in a sphere, a space that sort of has men at a certain position and women. Women should be having more children, right? It's their fault. The world is deteriorating because women should be at home making more babies, and that's the greatest threat to humanity. This is also a theme that's running through a lot of the space that a lot of these people operate in. As I say, I'm not saying Andrew Tate and Donald Trump are the same before people think I'm being anti-Trump. I'm not saying that. But there's very obvious stuff, and then there's subtle stuff that seems to be influencing the role of men and women and men's attitude towards women.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's highly reflective of some of those findings in the Women's Aid report, that this kind of old school, lazy evolutionary perspective on what it means to be a man or what you should be doing if you want to be a strong man in today's world. It's reflective of broad attitudinal division on the role of women. Which of course makes it very difficult when in a classroom scenario, if you're trying to then answer a question about from a young boy that's hearing these messages in a potentially divided society, how might you try and have a conversation about that without kind of being prescriptive in one's views?
What are the impacts in the classroom that we are seeing from this? Do we have evidence in that regard?
There's some interesting polling data from the UK that kind of speaks to, I suppose, the overall prevalence of Tate with teenagers. So just under 60% of teens have a positive view of him. There's some interesting kind of attitudinal differences where there's some pushback towards Tate's view of women, a small amount, but the stuff that's of appeal is the wealth and the success and the cars. But there's some international evidence from Australia, from the UK, and also anecdotally here in Ireland, that the messages directly coming from Tate are having an impact in terms of what people in the class are saying, the observation of an increase in misogynistic attitudes and also behaviours as well.
And it's very important for parents and guardians to know as well, too, that the way algorithms on social media work, that if a younger person, male or female, takes an interest in a particular video, or say, for instance, watches a 2 or 3 minute Andrew Tate clip, the algorithms work in such a way that that type of information is delivered to them all of the time until such time as they show an interest in something else. So it's not passive, really. Particularly TikTok, but also I noticed other platforms have improved their algorithms. It will continue to push this type of information constantly, and information around that information that drives it home to a greater extent. So it's just something we all need to be careful of about anything in life. The guidelines also have specific strategies and best practice. Hard to work out, was it? How do you approach this, right? Because there's an awful lot in there There's an awful lot in there because some of these people, for instance, would be big advocates of women's rights or children's rights. A lot of them would be at the same time commenting on the grooming gang controversy or criticizing the Taliban for insisting that women wear clothes head to toe. So it's complicated because there is some what is obviously very anti-women stuff, but at the same time, they also appear to be championing women and children.
Absolutely. And the first kind of core message that we built into the resource in consultation with an active overall research advisory group, which comprised of certainly clinicians, but also gender experts, people working more practically as well. But the first core message is that it is okay and indeed important to address and name Tate in the classroom if you're hoping to specifically understand the role of certain influencers. There was a real paralysis with messaging towards parents in the past kind of 2 years. On the one hand, there's this push towards pressurizing both teachers and parents to directly address Tate with young people. On the other hand, there's other messages saying, whatever you do, don't platform or somehow lend credence to Tate's views by bringing him up. Whereas what we say in the guide is it is okay. And we give a couple of principles, much like you mentioned earlier about this is what critical thinking might look like in terms of a set of questions that you could ask of that 2 minute Tate clip. And some basic kind of structures for meeting young people where they're at rather than where we would like them to be at without being prescriptive or finger wagging as well.
Yeah, of course. Right. How do people get information to this? Is it being sent to schools? Are they being offered it? Is it an online resource that's available to anyone who might have an interest in this?
Sure. So we're really happy to have it freely available on the Anti-Bullying Centre website. So people can go to DCU's Anti-Bullying Centre and the Observatory Project will have the resource there freely available for download.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for your time. I really do appreciate it. I'm sure we'll talk again. Okay, that was Dr. Dara McCashin, Assistant Professor at Dublin City University School of Psychology and creator of a new resource to help teachers and parents address online masculinity influencers. He doesn't want it referred to as toxic masculinity, but at the same time, there's nothing wrong with masculinity either, but that's his view. A caller says, doesn't a lot of masculinity come from religious views? Andrew Tate is a Muslim, and a lot of his views on society and manhood is based on their view. Well, he converted to Islam. I'm not sure in terms of how he displays his wealth and his attitudes and what have you would align with the Islamic faith, but I'm not quite sure. The caller goes on to say, society has changed so much. I took the view to stay away from relationships simply because women can now accuse you of anything in or out of a relationship, which is... there's a word for that. I don't think that's very healthy for you, certainly, or society. Women aren't that scary. Hi, what are the roads like from Termond to Kincastle? We'll chuck that out to our hive mind and see if we can get some answers for you. I used to own a shop and we were told if we treated the footpath and someone fell, we were liable. I can't understand why the councils can't do it, especially in towns for businesses. That's new information, but the second person that's mentioned that. Morning, Greg. The time we were in Germany, the shop owners had to salt the bit in front of their shop so no one would fall. It was up to shops. I think that's how you sort of get most of the main footpaths covered. But others are saying they've been told not to do that. Piles of grit along the road. People that lazy wouldn't throw a shovel on the road. I'm not sure what that listener's referring to, but maybe it's something specific to their local area. Okay, you're very welcome back to the program. Now, someone asked on Friday about Father Hegarty in Buncrana. Where was he buried? And we got lots of feedback in relation to this. Amongst those that contacted us was John Hegarty, West Innishowen History and Heritage Society. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Greg.
Thank you so much for joining us. So can you give us a bit of a history of Father Hegarty before we, I suppose, address the main question that was sent in to us?
Yes, well, as a member of the West Innishowen History Group, I had questions asked of me about, there was confusion about Friar Hegarty, who was killed by the Redcoats during the penal times. But the confusion comes from, at the time, of the penal days, there was three Hegarty priests martyred by the Redcoats. There was a Father Seamus Hegarty, who was a parish priest of Fawn. He was his house had been used by the Bishop of Derry to hide out from the Redcoats in Fawn. He was the Bishop of Derry, but when the Redcoats heard about it and they got to Fawn, the bishop was away. He knew they were coming for him. So in anger, the Redcoats then killed Father Seamus Hegarty, the parish priest of Fawn. He lived up Church Bray in Fawn. Then there was a Peter Hegarty, a Father Peter Hegarty, who was martyred over in Uchterlin, just across the Swally from us here, just north of Rathmullen. The same thing happened to him. He was hiding out in Uchterlin. The Redcoats got him, and he was. They were taking him to Rathmullen, and by the way, it tried to escape, so they had to kill him. But the third Hegarty was Friar Hegarty. It wasn't Father Hegarty. It was a Dominican friar from the Dominicans monastery by the government of the time, and he ended up coming to Inishowen here to Fawn and Desert Tegney and attending the Mass Rocks and saying Masses for the people. He was originally from Desert Tegney here and up just outside the town of Buncrana, up in here at about towards Stregill. And he was killed by they captured him too, and by the way he tried to escape too, and they had to chop his head off.
Wow. So to answer the question, someone asked quite simply, Friar Hegarty, where is he buried? Is there a simple answer to that question?
Well, there's a grave there at Friar Hegarty's Rock, just north of Buncrana, along the shore there. That's a big kind of a promontory rock there. And there is a grave at it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the oral history is that when he was killed there, they left his body just there at Friar Hegarty's Rock.
Hello, John. Okay, we've lost John there. I think we got the answer to that question, did we? Okay, we got the answer to that question. John, apologies, we have lost you there. Right, okay. We posted on our social medias today, the 6th of January, is known as Nulag na Mann. Nulag na Mann is women's little Christmas in celebration of the Feast of the Epiphany in Ireland. January 6th is marked by Nulag na Mann, or Woman's Little Christmas. On this day, it is the tradition in Ireland for the women to get together and enjoy their own Christmas, while the men folk stay at home and handle all the chores. Many men do all the chores now anyway, or much of the chores anyway. It's also common for children to buy their mothers and grandmothers presents on this day through this custom, though this custom is gradually being overtaken by Mother's Day. So although Nulag na Mann is slowly dying out in many parts of Ireland and County Cork and the southwest coast, the tradition is still very strong, I'm told. Many bars and restaurants in Cork City report a near 100% female clientele on this day, as the Corkonian women meet up with girlfriends, sisters, aunts and mothers to celebrate their own little Christmas with Nulag na Mann. Do you celebrate Nulag na Mann? Let us know. What do you do? I do recall in my own memory that it was a day where particular things happen for women. But on to some of the comments that came in on the social media. Morris says, I enjoy it as little Christmas, always taking down the Christmas decorations, as my hubby is very good in the kitchen. Anya says, try to celebrate every year, but not enough establishments provide entertainment for us. Anything on an Inishowen area is always booked out. Jamie, weird way to celebrate the Epiphany. Okay, thanks for that. Josie, it's not only in Cork, it's a very big tradition in Kerry as well for years. Doris, men do the housework. Lol. Thanks, Doris. Olivia, I celebrate it every year. Happy little Christmas, girls. Teresa, we need to bring it to Donegal first. I knew of it, which goes to show how it's how quickly things can die out generationally. Rosie, we need to make it a bank holiday, indeed. Kathleen, never knew about it. Men do housework, maybe an odd one. And Eugene says, enjoy, ladies. Without you, we wouldn't be here. So do you celebrate Nolag Naman? Let us know what you do. A caller says this behaviour is putting people at danger. Car registrations have been taken and have been passed on to the Gardaí. They've an ongoing investigation into the event. Most of the vehicles were out from. Sorry, let me just clarify. This is in relation to an issue of dangerous driving in the Muff area, but it wasn't just Muff, it happened in other areas. This call came in after that, my apologies. This behaviour is putting people at danger. Car registrations have been taken and have been passed on to the Gardaí. They have an ongoing investigation into the event. Most of the vehicles were from outside the jurisdiction. There were other instances in Bridgend and Fulcarra over the Christmas period. It's clear, it's a clear organised event because of the number who arrive at the same location. Other cars are used to block roads for young people doing the handbrake turns and what have you. I have a feeling now that the fact that such a spotlight has been shone on that, that there'll be a very swift response if it were to happen again. Right, okay. Now, unfortunately for many, the Department of Health has rolled back on a pledge to give free hormone replacement therapy to thousands of women from the beginning of January. All the department can tell the women now is that the free HRT will be rolled out, in inverted commas, as soon as is possible. Margaret O'Doherty, a friend of the show and pharmacist in Donegal, is with me now. Margaret, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Not at all. Thanks for having me, Greg.
I'm all right. So what is the story from pharmacies and pharmacists' perspective? It must be very frustrating because people are coming in presumably in the belief that this is available and now we're told it's not.
Well, it's more than frustrating and it's so disappointing for people who were expecting, and particularly at this time of year when everybody's fairly stretched, you know, and they think, oh, this is one less bill. And then you say to them, sorry, you're actually still going to have to pay for it. It's not a big surprise to us because from the very start, it was clear that there was no real momentum behind getting this up and running. It seemed to be, it was announced in the budget. And from then to now, there's been absolutely no communication with pharmacists whatsoever to tell us. All we know is what we hear in the media. We've had no official communication from either the Department of Health or the HSE. The Irish Pharmacy Union has been on to them. They've written to them. They've sort of basically said what they're saying in the press release. It's going to happen as soon as possible. But there's no indication of how it's going to happen, what's going to happen with it. Even before this announcement, Stephen Donnelly said that, oh, well, it's going to be free HRT, but you're still going to have to pay your GP. Mm. You're still going to have to pay your pharmacist for the dispensing fee, which isn't really free. And he never, or the department never gave us any indication of how they were going to actually pay us for anything that we would give out for free.
Well, it's quite remarkable when you point out the obvious flaws in all of this that in Budget 2025, outgoing Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, he said quite clearly, and you could also frame it as a pre-election promise as well, but he didn't say next year, he didn't say hopefully in the first quarter. He said that free HRT would be introduced on January 1st. And it seems after that announcement, or before it, or during it, no efforts were actually put in place and no logistics were put in place to actually make it happen.
None whatsoever. As I say, they didn't even speak to us about it. Pharmacists, like everybody else, are very under pressure. Everybody in the health service is under pressure. We haven't had a pay rise in 16 years. So we're saying to them, look, we can't do anything more until you start paying us for what we're doing already. It's really a problem. We have a free contraception scheme that works very well, and there's IT behind it, so that's integrated with our dispensing system. And we assumed that this would be a sort of an extension to that. The Irish Pharmacy Union have given them a template how that could work by simply extending that scheme, making it a women's healthcare scheme instead of just contraception. It would be quite simple to do from an IT point of view, and it would integrate with our dispensing systems, but they just aren't interested in talking to us about it, much less implementing it.
And Margaret, is this sort of frustration and sense of disrespect mainly amongst pharmacists? I mean, Do you think there was a general knowledge amongst women out there that this had been announced and was due to come in on January 1st? Like, are you getting many women coming in saying, "Now, right, I don't mind paying my dispense and charge if there is one, but I was under the impression my HRT would be free from January onwards"?
Certainly, it's very frustrating. The only thing is, it's been clear to us that there was going to be problems, so we were sort of trying to highlight it to people. Don't get your hopes up too much about this. You know, wait till you see what happens. And because it was clear to us that there simply was no way that it was going to be happening, certainly not on the 1st of January, and at the minute, not in the foreseeable future, particularly with Stephen Donnelly having lost his seat, although he's still Minister for Health, until we have a new Minister for Health and see what their priorities are. I can't see anything moving on it.
Yeah, I mean, it does really talk to governments really needing to take responsibility, whomever that government might be. You know, when you're committing on something so important, you at least need to have the plans in place for it. I don't think it can be a wish and then, you know, the election doesn't go your way and you're out in your ear and nothing ever comes of it.
Well, that's, I mean, it makes people very cynical about politicians and about election promises, which I suppose they tend to be cynical anyway. But something like this just reinforces that, you know, you cannot take them at their word, basically. And that's very disappointing for people who are hoping to, when they cast their vote in the expectation that what they vote for, I mean, they did vote back in the government that promised this. And they're still not getting what they voted for.
Yeah, and again, of course, too, we can't forget the fact that it always seems to be, when we're talking about health issues, those that affect women primarily. And here we are again, a commitment made specifically to women, it's fallen through for now, at least.
And it's also very disappointing, because I've spoken to you before about the problems we have actually accessing HRT. The various patches are constantly in short supply. And what a lot of women have said to me is, like, I really don't mind paying if I could get it.
Yeah.
You know, so really, if we could get that problem sorted first before we even think about it, because if you have a free scheme, it's going to increase the demand. Obviously, there's going to be more people looking for it if they're getting it free. So until we have a reliable source of supply, and again, there's nobody working on that, we don't have a chief pharmaceutical officer to take charge of the whole drug supply system in the country. So it's very frustrating, both for patients, for pharmacists, for the prescribers. Everybody's pulling their hair out, literally, and getting nowhere on it.
So that's just a reference there more generally to the supplies. We've spoken to you, and thankfully you've been able to keep us and those out there up to date. There are still supply chain issues. That's a problem that hasn't gone anywhere. Yeah,
it hasn't gone anywhere, and it's not going to go anywhere because, as I say, they haven't put somebody in charge of looking after it. I mean, it's a problem that needs one person taking overall charge. There's various agencies between the HSE, the PCRS, the Department of Health, the HPRA, and basically one of them bats it to the other and says it's their problem. And we're the ones left telling the person, sorry, I don't have your patches, or sorry, you're going to have to take a different type, or you're going to have to try and double up or half or something. You know, try to find a workaround, because there is nobody in charge of trying to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. And this is not necessarily, I mean, you talk about the supply chains for HRT. This is not necessarily... Is it that women, well, maybe women who thought they were going to get it for free and simply can't afford it are going to miss out on hormone replacement therapy now?
That's, I mean, definitely a possibility. I mean, but the same applies right across the healthcare system to things that people can't afford. But in women's health, what we find is that women tend to put other people ahead of themselves. So if it's something's needed for their husband or their children, they'll pay for that, but they'll put themselves at the bottom of the pile and say, I'll do without. And that's
okay. Listen,
that's why we need such a comprehensive, as I say, a women's healthcare program, extend the current free contraception scheme that is working well for women up to 35, make it available to all women and have it covering all women's health issues as well.
All right. Thanks so much as always. I do appreciate it. That's pharmacist in Donegal, Margaret O'Doherty. And I think in counties like Donegal and elsewhere, there is a one or two or three tier health system dependent on your income, in that there are private options now people are going towards if they need to see a doctor. Maybe they've called out of hours and they've been told we can see you in 12 hours, or maybe they've heard that, you know, there's so much pressure on the ED or what have you. And a lot of people who have resources are just saying, right, I'm not engaging with the public service. I'm going to use an alternative. But those of you, by the way, and sorry to have bad news for you, you may already know if you have private health insurance. I'm not sure of the uptake here in Donegal, but anyway, I'm sure there's some of you that are listening that have private health insurance. Health insurance costs are set to go up again. This is despite hikes in 2024. Around 600,000 people are due to renew their cover as VHI, Laya and Irish Life raise prices this month. Consumers are being hit with new health insurance price rises despite the main providers hiking premiums multiple times in the last year. Irish Life Health is increasing the cost of 130 of its plans, with Laya pushing up costs on 13 schemes and the VHI raising the premiums on 11 plans. Health insurance experts said it was the fourth Irish Life increase announcement in just over a year. A number of previously announced Irish Life Health premiums rises already took effect from the start of the month. New player Level Health is cutting some of the discounts it offers on two of its four plans. The latest rises come in a month when around 600,000 people are set to renew their cover. Now, it's not something I've ever had, is private health insurance, but is it the type of thing, what way does it work in your mind? Is it the type of thing that if you've been lucky enough to be healthy up until now, that you'll keep paying it and keep paying it, even if it increases, because you feel that maybe if you were to disengage and then re-engage, that you would miss out? Like, I'm just wondering, is there a sense that it's something you have to continue to pay, even if you haven't really drawn down any benefits from private health insurance? And I suppose as well, too, there are those who have ongoing health issues that would struggle maybe to move to another company, and you just keep having to pay. I just wonder how much pressure, these bills put on people, and is it something that you have to keep going at all the time? January 6th is my birthday, Greg. That's why everyone is celebrating. most probably thinking, is she still alive? That comes in from Eileen. Happy birthday to you, Eileen. I hope you have a wonderful day. The backer of Ergol Road is okay, I'm being told. Thank you very much for that. New Year, lads, and you have started already. Donald Trump and Andrew Tate, couple of headers, but they're not completely wrong in their opinions. Listen, our own influencers, i.e. our politicians, all parties. As I said, I tried to be really careful with the language that I used. Andrew Tate, for me, to be honest with you, I believe he is all bad. I think he's an absolutely horrendous individual. What he has done, what he does, how he makes his money, how he treats women, making them strip off in front of cameras and then laughs about it. His attitude towards very young girls as well, young women. I don't see any redeeming qualities in Andrew Tate. Donald Trump's Donald Trump, right? If you're politically inclined to support him, I think a lot of supporters of Donald Trump accept that he's imperfect, but they believe that he can deliver on his election promises. And I said in the interview that I wasn't saying both are the same, even though I was aware by using their names in the same sentence that people would presume that's what I meant. Difficult to accurately predict snowfall, but Met Aaron got it right with counties in South Midlands being worst hit. Not sure if it was panic buying, but did anyone notice how stocks of bread and milk were running very low in all the big stores over the weekend there? Yes, I did. There was no bread at all. Listen, we've covered the weather here for the last week. It was always very clear that there was weather coming, but they didn't know specifically where it was. And then as it became closer, it was clear that it was going to be the south and the Midlands. We were talking about the weather on Friday, and we stated quite clearly that there'd be very little snow over the northwest. That was said quite clearly on this show. And if there was likely to be snow affecting us, it would be Monday and Tuesday. We had the Donegal Weather Channel on.
The 9 till noon show, brought to you by Kelly's Toyota, where you can test drive our impressive range of hybrid vehicles.
Did you see me jump? Why did the advert start like that? But anyway, the point I was saying is that Words, my heart. I can't take it. I'm not doing that. There must be quite literally gremlins in the system. But anyway, the point I was trying to make is that we've pretty much outlined the weather as it was here on this show. And then people see headlines and they go, well, but the media is saying this, that and the other. No, the media isn't. The media you choose to get your information on might be predicting certain stuff, but everything that we've predicted on this radio station is what's effectively happened. And you have to be fair and balanced in it. I just find it amazing how people with certain ways of thinking politically that would be opposed to certain things and have views on certain things, that en masse, all of these free thinkers pivoted to weather alerts, that all of a sudden weather alerts were the greatest threat since God knows what. It's remarkable. All right, let's take a break. I'm actually going to press the button on this one. Perhaps I won't jump out of my skin.